Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Elaine Thompson, who, as it happens, was due to come onto my program a couple of weeks ago when the program had to be cancelled because of the fire around the studio. So fortunately, everything's gone off okay today, and I'll tell you that Elaine has been on before. The name may be familiar to you. She is an international clairvoyant medium. She's been contacted by ETs from Sirius. She's met a Starfleet captain from the Galactic Federation and also the Andromedan Council and its members. And on the last program, we spoke about her book, Voices from Our Galaxy. Today, we want to concentrate on her new book, which is issued in the meantime, called To Andromeda and Beyond. So, welcome to the program, Elaine.
Thank you, Mike. It's lovely to talk to you again.
And you indeed, yes. Anything exciting happened to you in the last few months since we last spoke?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Over to America again, again to Hawaii to run a seminar on sound. And I've been out into the forest communing with the Bigfoot, which is also exciting. They're kind of close relatives to the ETs, so we have some good contact there.
And
I've been teaching and doing seminars and having a wonderful time swimming with the dolphins.
How did you get time to write the book?
Being in contact with the Andromedans too.
Yes. Now, I'd like to ask you a question about Voices from the Galaxy just before we get on to your new book. I was looking back on it and I realised there was one thing I meant to ask you but I hadn't, which I thought might be interesting. You said that when you were trying to contact your guides, you pleaded with them asking, where are you? Why can't I reach you? I don't believe you're really there. What is the story around that and what happened?
Well, that was way back in my history, Mike, back when I was living near Glastonbury, not in Glastonbury. And I was attending a local kind of a development circle to keep myself on track with my clairvoyance, et cetera, et cetera. And you know how it goes when you're busy with family and children and all those things. Your mind is always full of a million things. And I've been week after week, and I didn't feel like I was getting anywhere. I couldn't seem to contact my guides. And I know now that it was just because I was in a mental pickle myself, you know, always too busy, always running. And on this particular occasion, I got really desperate. I thought, I'm going to give this up, you know, as we all do. We test ourselves, and we think, oh, God, this is all rubbish. This is crazy. Nothing's happening. And in answer to my plea, and I was most surprised, all of a sudden this amazing scene opened up in front of my my third eye vision, which is in the front, just like a television screen. It was so clear in total technicolor. It was amazing. And first of all, I saw, like I was looking into the sky, there were huge banks of clouds in a clear blue sky. And as these clouds kind of unrolled, there I saw this vision of a beautiful staircase going up into the heavens, and down the staircase came all these wonderful angels, seraphim and archangels, and playing beautiful musical instruments. It was like a Busby Berkeley movie. It was so amazing. And I was totally enthralled. The first thing I'd seen, actually, thinking about it before I saw that, were these kind of cherubs floating around in the sky. I thought, oh, this is interesting, you know, unusual. Mm-hmm. And as it unfolded, I was so overwhelmed with thanks and gratitude that I started to cry, but very silently, because we were all sat in a circle very quietly. Nobody else knew what was going on. Mm. And to cap that, if you could possibly cap that, suddenly there came down the staircase this beautiful shining figure, I mean, totally wrapped in white light. And as far as I could see from what I knew of the Bible and things like that, this was a figure all in blue with a beautiful white robe over her head, you know. And she looked up at me, and I could see it was like our images of the Virgin Mary.
Mm.
And her eyes were so, so, so compassionate and so full of love and so full of beauty. And she looked at me and she said, we have not forgotten you. Mm. And that was it. That was enough for me. I mean, that would be enough for anyone, I think.
Yeah.
And I burst into tears because that was my answer to, you know, keep going, never give up, and we've not forgotten you, you know. It was a real miracle that came out of nowhere to keep me on track with where I was.
What a way to answer you. That was incredible.
Yes, I mean, how amazing to ask and get an answer. I mean, so often we tune in and I think it's the troubles of the day and all the conflagration that goes on around us, and sometimes we can't always get clear things for ourselves, but that was a definite miraculous confirmation that I was on the right path and that I had to continue.
That's the sort of experience that you clearly never forget, do you?
Oh, absolutely. No, it was on a par with the very first experience I ever had right in the beginning when I was about 15 or 16 when I saw Jesus.
Mm.
And that, you know, that was when I was a total atheist, didn't believe in anything, and, you know, and he appeared to me and totally blew me away and walked with me down the street, so much so that I felt like I was lifted off the ground. It felt like I was levitating, you know, and gliding down the street. And I saw him from head to toe. His eyes, oh, that always seems to be such a feature with spirits of high vibration, that their eyes just take you in and take you everywhere. They take you out into the cosmos. They expand you so you feel like you're completely one with everything. And he only spoke one sentence to me, and he said, "I am with you always." And then he disappeared. And it was the experience I had, the personal experience I had. And remember, I was a complete child, really, at 16.
Yeah.
Know anything about anything. And I felt so connected to the entire universe. It was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. My life changed after that. I changed. I just seemed to wanting different things.
Yeah. Gosh, well, that's two wonderful experiences. So I'm glad I asked you about those. It's nice to hear it from someone else. Something I would like to ask you, since you've mentioned Jesus there, did he appear to you in a way that was recognizable when you think of the different paintings and pictures that you see of him?
Yes, he did. And I think that happens because, you know, when we need to identify as a person, someone who comes to us, they do appear in a way in which we can recognize them. And I only knew Jesus from the pictures of the Sunday school that I'd been to when I was a child. So, you know, I didn't know anything about anything else. So I instantly recognized that was who it was. It was like the Virgin Mary. I recognized her from the images that I'd seen of her. So that's what they do. They come to you in a recognizable way,
even
though their appearance might be updated and different.
Yeah.
So that you know... or who it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, they can present themselves in any form they like, can't they? And the obvious thing to do is in one that the person they're contacting recognises. Otherwise, I suppose it wouldn't have any point. Well, that's a very interesting way to start the programme. Just talking of one thing that you mentioned there, this image that you have in your mind, this sort of thing like a TV, do you constantly use that, or was that just a one-off experience?
Well, no, that's interesting because that I've explained and finally found out and explained how that happens in this second book I've written, by the Andromedans. There are several ways that I see things, and when it's a kind of an incoming image from outside, then I see it like a television screen from, you might call it the third eye area. And it's in, you know, absolute technicolor, very detailed, very graphic, and it's just like watching television. And the other way that I see is kind of about 6 inches from the top of my head out to the front, which I call that my internal television, which is where when I'm communicating telepathically with the Andromedans, I go out to meet them, and they take me out. They take me out into the universe, or they take me to somewhere. And I, when I do that, I experience it physically. I can sense things, I can smell things, I can touch things, and I'm completely kind of removed. So there is a difference between that third eye area and the crown area. And this was explained to me, and it is in the book, all about the energetic points in the body and how they work, including how to look inside your own body and where the energetic points are for self-healing.
That's extremely interesting. Let's get on to... the book itself. It's an e-book, by the way, isn't it?
It's an e-book at the moment, but I'm working towards getting it printed up because so many people have asked me for hard copy.
Yes. So is that very far away?
Well, we'll put it within the next, say, I've got a busy schedule between now and February, but say within the next 6 months.
Oh, I see. Oh, that sounds pretty good.
But anyone if he wants to read it, of course they can always, you know, email me and I can send them the e-book copy.
Yeah, okay. Well, before the program ends, we'll give you an opportunity to give them more details about that.
And I'm also in the process of painting more pictures of new ETs to go in the book, so that will be in the heart. Yes, they're not in the e-book at the moment, but... Yes.
Well, I could mention to our listeners that having read your voices from our galaxy, you've got some excellent drawings in there, coloured, of course, so that we can see the difference in their hair colouring and eyes and things like that. And as I recall, they're all humanoid, and some are very human-looking.
Some of them are, Some of them are. And some of them are very different. I think that was the point of the whole... first book was for that they wanted me to illustrate how the different ET races look, and that we shouldn't be afraid of any of them, if they look to us.
Yes, and your particular guide, who was a female, I thought with or without her hair, she was extremely human looking.
Yes, very beautiful features. And, you know, apart from the color of the skin, which is slightly blue, she looks basically as human as you or I. Their head shape is slightly different, but I understand from them that they do have the ability to take on, they can change their the way they look, in order to, integrate when they come down into Earth, because they do come down. In fact, many races of ETs are so human-looking that I think, I'm pretty sure they're already here, and working at ground zero, as it were, to help us through the coming changes that we're going through.
Yeah, that's great. I'm thinking, though, that even if you met one who you couldn't distinguish, say, from a human being, maybe you would just sense that the energy was different.
Absolutely, yeah. They have such amazing energy, and a higher vibration is something that you find when you meet someone that you are not quite sure about, that you're very attracted to. I remember some years ago I met a young man on his way from somewhere to Australia, I think he was, and I was absolutely convinced. I thought that man looked so much like an angel. It's unbelievable. His eyes were wonderful. But I'm sure now, looking back, he was probably an ET.
Yeah. Yes, there's a lot more that goes on in this connection than we realise. So I'm certainly welcoming the open contact that they say will come.
And then me too.
We can enjoy all these revelations about them, how we relate to one another, and also get things cleared up about our past where there are mysteries and maybe conflicts on whether we did that or the other. It'll be a wonderful time.
Oh, absolutely. Wouldn't it? I mean, so many people are just longing to know about Earth's history.
Yes, yes.
Because I do believe that some of the history that we know now is just a fragment of what actually happened on this Earth over the last, 500,000 years.
Yes,
when you look
yes.
for Zachariah Sitchin, it's wonderful. He translates the Sumerian text and talks about all kinds of things, including, you know, E.T. having been here and working with us. And
yes.
So there's so much, really, that we could learn from them.
Yes. And I think it's true to say at this stage that the scientists that are investigating our genetics have at times found what appears to link us with the ET, so we're therefore getting confirmation that they have genetically engineered the human that we are today.
I think so. I think they've helped us tremendously to make great leaps forward in our knowledge and our abilities, both with simple things like farming and working with metal and
yes,
building
yes.
and all that kind of thing.
Yes.
And I think if it wasn't for them, we would probably still be Stone Age.
We wouldn't even have the wheel yet.
Well,
anyway, talking of things like that helping us,
mm-hmm.
In your book, To Andromeda and Beyond, you said that they told you we are advancing towards being an intuitive-based society. And
absolutely.
So I've got two questions there. I mean, is it happening now, and what does it exactly mean for the future?
Well, yes, it is happening, and I'm absolutely sure. When we look at all the things that we think are negative sometimes, like kids playing on computers the whole time. But what these children are developing is incredible hand and eye coordination. They play so hard, so fast on some of these games, that they do things without thinking. And that is exactly what the ETs are urging us to do. We need to get out of our logical way of thinking and get into our intuitive-based right-brain thinking, where we feel what we need to do rather than think what we need to
yeah.
do. I mean, they also tell me that they power their ships with they drive their ships with the power of the mind. Well, in order for us to do that, then we have to be into a non-logical space. You can't
yes,
think
yes.
about pressing buttons. You have to think holographically. You have to see the whole picture in order to be able to go from A to B and control it. The machine that you're driving, whether it's a plane or a spaceship or whatever it is, has to become part of you. And I believe, actually, with modern technology, they're already working towards that.
Yeah.
So computers these days, adapted for people who are disabled, are already using just thought control to work them.
Yes, I don't know if it was in your book or someone else's I read, but
mm-hmm.
I recall having read that they say that the organic ships that they're in, they do become, as you said, one with each other and become, like for that purpose, like a single conscious entity.
Absolutely, yes. It's a melding of consciousness.
Yes.
That's why they tell me that these computers are, to all intents and purposes, alive. And they, because everything in this universe is energy, when you match a frequency, a vibration of energy, one consciousness to another, then you become one. That's how they bring their ships so far across galaxies and across the universe with such ease and such instantaneous speed.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, of course, we're organic, like we are as human beings, self-repairing to a certain extent. Mm. So are the organic ships. Because they're a living entity, it's like they automatically regenerate themselves. And I think it's a wonderful, compatible, great. I mean, wouldn't you just like to have everything that you could kind of think to your washing machine? Okay, turn on. I'm going to do a program now. And it would just do it. It was wonderful. Then, the important thing is to then monitor what you think. Otherwise, you'd have things, gadgets going off all over the place. And that's another one of their points, is we do have to be aware and be very conscious of our thoughts. Because our thoughts are all frequency and vibration. And in order for us to get out of the aggressive, emotional society that we are today into a more peaceful, centered society, the first thing that everyone has to do is to take responsibility for themselves and to look at how they are using their emotions and whether they become their emotions or whether they're in control.
Yes. Yes, and talking of that type of thing earlier where you were talking about the spacecraft, I can remember reading that one of those that crashed on the Earth and was back engineered, the people who were looking at it were quite convinced that from the panels and things inside that they did control it by thought.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. I could totally agree with you there.
Yes. Now, in the early part of your book, in the first chapter, you mentioned that there might be situations where in the event of extreme climate conditions, they would take people up on the ships. Now, did they mean that that would be purely a temporary release from the dangers and they would be returned? I mean, what was sort of the follow-on to that?
Yes, I think that's what they meant. I think that they meant that, you know, in extreme cases like earthquakes and tsunamis and things like that, they would rescue people. And I did question them about that because I know if you were rescued by an ET in a spaceship, you'd probably either freak out or you just wouldn't know what was going happen happening or be very afraid. So they did say that for those who were aware and prepared in their mind, then it would be a very conscious thing that would happen. For those who weren't, it would be like missing time or just going to sleep and waking up and yourself somewhere else that's safer.
Yeah.
So they do have our well-being and our welfare in mind when it comes to things like that. And I think it would be a temporary thing where they would just pick up and put down.
Right.
It's out of harm's way.
As far as we know, that type of thing hasn't occurred yet. So does that mean they will only do that after they've been announced to the Earth people, once they've made contact with us in general terms?
Not necessarily. No, I think that it could be happening kind of under our nose and we don't really realize it.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many people who've survived these terrible things, you know, they have memory blanks. They don't remember. They say, well, there was a big bang, and the next thing I knew, I was here or there, or I was outside the building. And I think, you know, they use their ability to block the mind in order to save people from distress.
Yeah.
And let's face it, who keeps tabs on everything that happens all around the world? Not many of us. I mean, we do try, but, you know, so I think that in their way, they could be doing it now.
Yeah.
And I also think that they're, you know, preventing things from being worse than they could be.
I think
by helping, you know, there's been news reports from, say, Mexico and places like that where earthquakes have started to happen and then died down, or a volcano has looked like it was going to erupt, and the seismologist had said, oh, this is going to be huge, we better evacuate everybody. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly everything dies down. And I'm sure, in the same way that they can alter our, shut down our nuclear missiles, I'm sure that using frequency, they can affect some of the things that happen and make them maybe not as bad as they would have been if they hadn't died.
Oh, yes, I'm absolutely certain they do have the technology. And just following on a point you made there, I'm sort of thinking now that when we had that big tsunami not very long ago, that it's happened so suddenly and so many people, in effect, get washed away. When they talk of the number of people, the loss of life due to it, of course, they're not necessarily counting bodies. So if hundreds were suddenly taken up in the craft, there would naturally be an assumption that they drowned at sea, wouldn't there?
Exactly, yeah. Yes, exactly. You're so right there. You know, and sometimes, you know, they never find bodies and assume that they've all been eaten by sharks and things like that. But, you know, I believe that, and especially they did tell me that, you know, the indigenous peoples, natives of you know, Asia and Australia and the jungles and that sort of thing, because they are less kind of less westernized than we are, they lead a simpler life, they have simpler beliefs, that they are able to accept that kind of thing a lot easier. It's one of those things that I just happen to be reading that book, Newton Message Down Under, where she talks about the real people in, as the tribe, they call themselves real people in Australia. And they talked about going home. They talked contact with ETs you know, I think there are many people all over the world that recognize their connection. And it wouldn't be a surprise at all if they got picked up.
No, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's coming back to, I suppose, your intuitive feeling. If that feels right to you, what they're saying is accept it. Don't try and use your logic to deny it.
That's right. And one of the biggest things they're trying to teach us all to is to deal with, master our fears. There is nothing to be afraid of. And so often, our whole lives are ruled by fear. You know, fear of have I got enough, fear of going out at night, fear of anything, fear of the dark, fear of cats, you know, anything. And they are asking us, and of course this links in with going to the right brain mode of thinking where, you know, everything is good and everything is right. It's all leading in the same direction. And I think one of the most wonderful things that landed on our doorstep recently is Eckhart Tolle's book, New Earth, which talks to us about our fears and you know, how it's illusory. Fear comes from within us. We create it. And I think that will be another big step when we take responsibility for ourselves and look at our fears. That's another big step towards us accepting the ETs and being eager to meet them and not being at all worried about what their agenda is. Because like so many people in the military have said, you know, if they were out to annihilate us, they could have done it a long time ago, and they haven't.
No, absolutely.
They're very peaceful.
Yes. Well, this is the point. They wouldn't have had to wait until powers like the US have this high-tech weapons. As you said, they could have done it maybe even before we discovered the way to bring about a nuclear explosion. So it's quite correct. And on the question of fear, I think that's figured so much over the last few years to keep telling us that fear is a weapon that the dark use, and if you express the fear, you're just feeding that energy for them.
Absolutely, yes. That's why they tell me, and I've written it in the book too, that we have to focus our attention on Positive Things. It's all about where we make our reality.
Yes.
And they've gone into lengthy description about the light and the dark,
mm-hmm.
and telling me basically that everything is just energy, and everything contains both the light and the dark. You can't have one without the other, but it's where you choose to focus your reality, where you choose to focus your vision, whether you're a negative person, pessimist, or an optimist. And we all know about that. We all know that if you try and stay optimistic and you try and see the bright side of everything and you look for the silver lining in everything, that life does become better. Life, you know, life is what you make it. And
yes,
if you choose to make it full of light, then that's what you get.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, not everybody has a happy, easy life. But I suppose another way of looking at it is don't allow yourself to become a victim. Don't sort of go around depressed and negative because you think everything happens. So you've got to try and take a different, as you say, a different look at the position you're in. Try and be a bit more positive.
Yes, well, you can look around you any day and always find someone that's probably in a worse position than you are.
Yeah.
And gratitude is gratitude for what you've got rather than whining about what you haven't got.
Yes.
One of the most positive things you can have every day.
Yes.
Waking
because
up
after
grateful
all,
for the sunshine or the rain.
Yes.
And we get plenty of that in England.
Yes. And the birds singing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's absolutely correct. Now, talking of energy, they said in one of your early chapters that our sun has an effect on the Earth, or is having an effect on our Earth and solar system. And I think in the messages talking about the changes, that comes over quite strongly. But what is their opinion as to what the sun is doing?
Well, this is quite a controversial point, but I think it's very, very true. And I think you'll find many people out there in the know agree with me.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're everybody on the planet now is going green and trying to sort out the mess we've made with all the pollution and so on. And so we should. Yes, I think that's a very valid point. We should clean up our act because we are polluting the planet terribly. But when it comes to global warming and all that temperature and climate change, they tell me that the sun is the major mover in this whole scenario. And what is happening, like has happened in the past many times, is we are going through a natural, normal cycle of the sun. And the data to back that up is longer than you can write on a shopping list.
Right,
apart from the fact that we just have to look at some of the scientific data that says the polar caps on Mars are also melting. The magnetic field around Jupiter is changing. The atmosphere on Venus is changing. So our whole solar system is going through an enormous change. In fact, the galaxy, as it moves slowly through space, is going through a different quadrant in space, and it's affecting everything. And the sun goes through what they call a solar maxima and a minima every 11 years. So you have a minima at year one and a maxima at year five.
Yes, yes.
And some of the reports that are out now that we should be in a solar minima at the moment, but we've had what they call X-class flares and coronal mass ejections way higher than have ever been recorded before.
Mm.
So this is a natural cycle from the sun. And they explained to me that the sun is putting out particles, you know, beaming out particles all the time. And these are, of course, all raining down on Earth. They affect the Earth's magnetic shield.
Yeah.
And they affect our electricity, all things pertaining to the environment, but they also affect us too. And when you think about the changes that have happened on Earth since the 1960s, the advent of flower power and the advent of the hippies and all that. I mean, we've gone through a monumental change in our societies, in our way of thinking. Unbelievable. And this is due partly to the effect of the sun in our solar system and the different things, different chemicals and solar rays that we are being exposed to.
Yes, yes. Right. Now, there's evidently some information in your messages about the beginning of our universe. What is their answer to that if you ask them how is it created or formed or whatever?
Well, that was a very interesting thing and took me quite by surprise when they started to tell me about that. But they gave me the information in a kind of a pictorial form. And the first thing they showed me was bubbles, like if you can imagine our universe inside of a soap bubble. And they, you know how soap bubbles form on the top of a washing up bowl, and
yeah.
they sit together so there's a kind of a flat interface.
Mm.
Well,
that's
they
right,
tell
yeah.
me that universes are clustered together like bubbles. And they also tell me that they can only go back so far, but from what they understand from their history, in the beginning, there was just energy everywhere, you know, rushing around in space. Nothing is ever static. Nothing stands still. Everything moves all the time. And this is where they brought in a very interesting concept about light and dark matter and dense matter and light matter, and it's everything to do with frequency, you know, how fast something vibrates. And they said that because of the law of attraction, like attracts like a tuning fork resonating will start off another tuning fork resonating.
Oh, yes, yes.
They said that the light matter became concentrated, so there was kind of two ends of the spectrum. There was light, but there was also brilliant light. And around that, kind of intensified the denser, darker matter. And it's a bit like a metaphor for the human body,
yeah.
wherein it's like we have the light around us, our aura. We have the dense human body, but inside is the spark, is the soul, is the brightest energy of all. And if you can imagine that like a huge ball with a light band around the outside edge, a denser, darker band going towards the middle, and then a very bright, brilliant ball in the middle. And because of the law of attraction, they tell me that they put it very poetically, and they said the light, the outer light, called to the inner light. And that's almost like when we die, you know, our the energy from above calls to our soul to come home.
Mm.
And so this very brilliant matter was attracted to the outer matter and kind of burst through all the dark. And they tell me that the friction of what happened, because there was like a magnet attracting another magnet, like very strong attraction.
Yes.
The friction created fire, and out of that fire and combustion, the elements started to form, the chemicals and the things.
Oh.
Things fused together that had not previously been together. And that's how all the different elements started to form. And then, of course, because there was this massive explosion when the light came from the center to the exterior through the dark, and then we had, I suppose you would, it's like a splash in the water, you get lots of droplets. Well, those droplets formed spheres, and that's when all the planets started to form, all the galaxies. You know, I don't understand the whole picture, but I can see the kind of the logic in that, you know, how that might But they gave me a whole chapter on principles of light and dark, and exactly what it is and how it works, and quite amazingly interesting.
Yeah.
And they tell me, you know, as we say, as above, so below, and what you see in the macrocosm out there is reflected in us as a microcosm. They also tell me about choices and energy, and how every thing and every option that we ever have is always a mixture of light and dark. It comes to us as energy, and then depending on how we resonate, whether we resonate on the light side or on the dark side or in the gray area in the middle, is how we receive it and how we see it. So it goes the whole thing about being an optimist. So when you receive something, you always see the good side of it. You always resonate, attract the good side.
Yeah. That sounds pretty sensible and, dare I say, logical. Has part of what you've said there explained the way they view or interpret the fabric of the universe?
Everything is energy. Everything is energy. In fact, they gave me a very, very interesting kind of explanation of it, which I have actually put on my blog site, to Andromeda, News from Andromeda, sorry. And they kind of made a comparison to it being like knitting.
Yeah.
And energy is just energy. And it's like a long strand. It flows and it never ends. Like the omega sign, you know, the infinite figure eight that continues to flow on itself. And they say that it's kind of, they explained it like as it travels, it forms nodes and events and places, like knitting. Like when you're knitting and you cross things over, it makes a stitch. And it weaves into what they call the fabric of the whole universe, the way everything is joined together. It's actually all part of the same. It's like one big ball of wool. One long strand, but all woven into the intricate patterns of galaxies and planets and stuff like that. And that was another important point they said to me. They talked to me about nuclear explosions. And they said how that kind of event makes like a hole in the knitting where you can never ever put it back as it was. You can rework it, but that's why it's such a dangerous thing. And I think that's one of the reasons why they're showing up in such numbers now, because we discovered nuclear power.
Yes, that's right.
And they want to stop us from doing stupid things with it.
It's interesting talking of that, because only today I had an email with a link to YouTube, and assuming the interpretation of what I saw is correct, it showed a missile launched into space, and although it wasn't terrifically clear, it later showed what appeared to be a flying saucer, which looked like a bright light, sort of more or less encircled the missile, and you saw these beams come out, a couple of shots, and it destroyed the missile.
Yes, absolutely, and thank God for that. Thanks also the ETs that are doing that, because we are so silly sometimes, so stupid in the things we do. I mean, did it say which country the missile came from?
Well, the video was in Italian, so presumably it was videoed over that country.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
But, I mean, where the missile came from, it maybe is a different thing.
Could be, yeah, it could be from anywhere.
Yeah. Look, I must ask you about orbs, because in one of the chapters they talked about orbs. And my interest and my listeners is that a few weeks ago I had a lady on the program who was well into that, and she's photographed them and she's communicated with them. Now, what do the Andromedans say they are?
Well, that's another very interesting thing, and they quite blew me away when they told me. Now, they didn't say that there's just one type of orb and this is what it is. But they did show me that, first of all, they showed me that now we are beginning to see into the fourth dimension with our cameras and our infrared field glasses and so on. So, and as everything is changing, these things are now becoming more visible. And I will say that I can now see orbs with my eyes open, especially at night. It's easier to see them at night. But they showed me this one particular type of orb that looked, to all intents and purposes, like a jellyfish. And I said, well, why can we never see the kind of the long streamers of energy that it has coming out of the back? And they said, well, because they're very attracted to high vibrations, very attracted to light. They're very attracted to us when we're joyful or in meditation, when our vibrations go up. And whenever we flash a camera, they turn towards the light. So we only ever see the top side of them, if you want to call it that, the front view. But they did, I do understand that you can see orbs under the sea, you can see orbs in the air. You can see now, I've seen photographs of diamond-shaped orbs and hexagonal-shaped orbs, not just round orbs. So when they told me that there are hundreds of different types of orbs, and some of them represent creatures that are just in our fourth dimension, that have been there all the time, you know, and they're not going to, they don't hurt us, they're not affecting us in any way. It's just that we've never been able to see them before. Now, I understand that some people think that they represent spirits, which could well be true. I mean, my Andromedan friend was just talking about one type of orb, I think, as an illustration to say there are many. Some people say they're angelic forms. I'm open on what they are, but I do know that the type of orb they showed me definitely had kind of long streams of energy, and it did look, it looked remarkably like a jellyfish, but I thought if I, well, I did come out and say it, I put it in my book, and I thought, well, you know, people can make their own mind up, but that doesn't, that's not including the whole spectrum, of course.
Right. Now, Elaine, it's getting so interesting here. I could have had you on for another hour, but the fact is I've got about 4 minutes left, and I want to give you the time I promised you to tell them about your ebook. But there's one question I'll ask you to finish up, so you'll have to keep your answer fairly short, which is probably impossible. I wanted to know how you responded to the question when they said, do you want to come and see our ships?
Oh, my Well, absolutely, yeah, I said yes straight away. And I went there and they took me on a tour of the ships and I saw all kinds of amazing things, including other people from Earth up there, you know, in a kind of a council room where they were discussing exactly who amongst the Federation was going to be allocated to do what. You know, amongst the group of people, the group of extraterrestrials, they're saying, okay, well, we need to organize who's going to be in charge of dealing with animals and people and who's sending what program. And it was extremely, extremely interesting. And plus, I also, I saw so many other things, animals, and I saw the place where babies are born, part of their personal life on the ship. It was truly amazing.
I think you could probably spend a whole hour talking about that as a special subject. And it's clear, Elaine, although I'm booked up well into the future, I'm going to have you back again, then ask you the rest of the questions that I've got. And now, I've got to announce my guests for next week, but we've got about 2 or 3 minutes left. So tell our listeners how they can get to your ebook.
Right, well, if you go to my website, which is www, with all the dots, Elaine, E-L-A-I-N-E, dash, Thompson, T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N, .com. That's the easiest way to get through both of my books, and my email address is on there. And anyone can email me. I'm very happy to hear from people all over the world, and I do very often. And there's also another place, which is a blog spot, which is all about news from Andromeda. Everything that I get when it's time to type it up that's new goes up on there, and that's http :// news from Andromeda, that's all one word, .blogspot.com.
Right, that's great. You fitted that in very nicely, thank you. I have to say thank you very much for coming onto the program. At last we made it after that cancellation. And it's been terrifically interesting. I'm sure our listeners would agree with me. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you again.
Well, I think obviously when we have you on next time, and we hope it won't be too far away, you'll no doubt be able to tell us a bit about your contact with the Yeti or the Sasquatch.
That's an amazing story.
Well, don't start now, otherwise we'll be out here longer. No, all joking apart, I'd love to hear about that, but we'll have to
Just very briefly, if you go to www.joanocean.com, you can read about some of our adventures.
Oh, right. Thank you. Thank you for mentioning that one, then. That's interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll try and confirm these in my write-up for the archive so that people, if they've missed it, they can perhaps check in there. Anyway, can I say, listeners, next week I have Mario Beauregard, who has written a book called The Spiritual Brain. And in the book, he discusses the experiments he conducted on a group of nuns who allowed him to monitor their brains while they created an intense spiritual experience. And he looks at it both from a scientific point of view and a spiritual one, and I'm sure that will be interesting. So thank you for being with me, and I hope you'll be with me next week. God bless you all. Thank you.
God bless you. Bye.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.